Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Hello, everybody. This is Tammy Gaskell. I'm the director of the Roelof Janssen Community Library in Copake, New York. And I'm joined today by Gretchen Hockmeister, who's the executive director at the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon, Connecticut. And today we are talking about the impact of cuts to the Institute of Museum and Library Services, or IMLS, which is the federal agency. It's an independent agency that funds libraries, museums, and archives. For those of you who have not been following the news quite as closely on library topics as we have, on March 14th, President Trump signed an executive order which essentially shuts down the Institute for Museum and Library Services, reducing it to its statutorily required functions. Any discretionary funding was to be stopped, and even the statutory requirements are in some question of when those will be fulfilled. So this will have an impact on libraries throughout the country, but I know that they have had a particular impact in Connecticut, so I'm going to start by asking Sharon what this has meant for her library and for others in Connecticut.
Yes, well, Connecticut was singled out with two other states, Washington and California, on April 1st when a letter was sent during the night to the Connecticut State Library that our LSTA grants to states would be terminated. And the LSTA are library service and technology grants. And this is how federal funding comes down to libraries distributed through the state. And these funds do not are not distributed or directly support individual public libraries, but rather they fund programs, services, and resources that are provided across Connecticut under the umbrella of the Connecticut State Library. And Connecticut apparently was singled out with these other states because of their reputation of promoting equity and accessibility in particular in library services. Unfortunately, what this means that the amount that was slated for Connecticut to receive in this fiscal year was a little over $2 million. It was $2,164,000. And a million of that had not yet been distributed to the state as of April 1st. So the state has basically lost $1 million that we've been told will not be coming to the state. And what this money supports are different programs and services that come out of the State Library's Division of Library Development, which is the arm of the State Library that supports public libraries across the state. So things that are in jeopardy of being cut are the Middletown Service Center, which is the office that contains a lot of shared collections, things that can be passed around between libraries to help, in resource sharing and to cost cuts, things like that, continuing education, professional development. Summer reading programs across the state are supported in part by the state. This one is very upsetting, the Connecticut Library for Accessible Books, which is a Braille library for the visually impaired. The state interlibrary loan delivery system is in peril right now. All of these different programs are staffed at least part-time by somebody whose salary at the state library is supported by that grant. The thing that people don't really know what's going to happen, the kicker in all of this, is that these programs are federally mandated by Congress. Mm-hmm. These are statutorily mandated things for infrastructure programs that have to be available for people in Connecticut. And so if the federal funding dries up, the question is, can the state step in and fill the gap? So currently there's about $1 million shortfall for these things, and nothing has been cut as of this point. People are still going to their jobs in Middletown at this point. What else can I say about it? It's a number of lawsuits have been filed. 20 states' attorneys general joined together to show that this, to try to argue that these cuts were illegal. That is, you know, going through the courts as we speak. I believe a new lawsuit of the three states that have actually lost their rest of their funding for this year. They have a separate lawsuit. I know museums are also fighting this. The Connecticut Endowment for the Humanities lost, I think, almost $2 million that comes down from the National Endowment for the Humanities. That was a separate cut, but they're working together with museums to fight all of these cuts. I know the Mark Twain House, which is a very beloved landmark in Hartford, also lost a bit of funding through the IMLS cuts. But the state library is the largest recipient of those funds. So I'm sorry to go on and on so long, Tammy, but that's what's happening here. So we encourage people to write letters, send emails, and to just let people know how important libraries are and how these things will affect them. I think if something were to be evident, you know, most quickly to see a for the patron to notice the impact of this, it could be the interlibrary loan
delivery services. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure we would, you know, people would work together and try to jump in and do something, but it would be severely curtailed, obviously. Wouldn't be able to get all across the state and all that kind of thing. But that's probably the biggest impact that people would see on a day-to-day basis if things continue to worsen.
So New York is, we have not received such a letter. Like you said, Connecticut was one of three states. The other two are California and Washington.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't know if we will get such a letter, but New York is still concerned about getting the rest of their funding. They, New York State Library relies on $8.1 million in federal funding from the IMLS through the
four times as much
program.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
It is.
And they're not sure if they're going to get it all. If, you know, it might just be delayed.
Right.
They're wondering if it's going to be this year, but then next year is not good. So there's just a lot of uncertainty.
Right.
And so the impact of that is, like in Connecticut, it's the Division of Library Development that we work with, the public libraries work with, and that is almost entirely funded by these IMLS funds. So
right.
If the DLD is defunded, what does that mean?
Right.
I mean, we work with them to get state construction aid grants, which our library is planning to apply for this summer. Our system, the Mid-Hudson Library System, is supported primarily with state funds, but that those state funds come through the DLD. So if the DLD is, you know, it's crippled because their staff is gone. What does that mean in terms of them getting their funding? So there's a lot of trickle-down impacts that we're expecting and trying to, you know, anticipate and find ways to work around. We don't have a New York State budget yet. We're hoping maybe this week they'll pass it. It's a month overdue now. But I know they were pushing to have the state put in some contingency plans in case these federal funds don't come through. How would the state library be funded if we don't get these funds?
Right.
So we'll see. Hopefully that gets passed in the next week or two, and we'll see where we stand at that point.
Right. The Connecticut budget has been, you know, introduced, and it does not have additional funding for libraries. It has, you know, the sort of status quo.
The usual
funding
yeah.
from the state mm-hmm. level for libraries. So there was no plan made, you know, if this funding does dry up for us.
Right.
Do you also have a lot of good professional development that comes through that funding? We get some great stuff that's funded through the DLD.
Yeah, I mean, primarily for us, it's the impact on our system, I would say, that's going to be most evident. The funds provide things like Central Library Services Aid, which pays for our shared ebook platform, the Libby platform that everybody uses, as well as a lot of shared reference materials. Through the DLD, we get coordinated outreach aid, which supplies grants to local libraries for like pilot projects and outreach work. And as I mentioned, the state construction aid. So those are the things we're kind of looking to see if those get delayed in any way. But yes, the state library also, they oversee like the certification of librarians, professional development, and helping boards of trustees with their professional development, chartering libraries, all kinds of sort of behind the scenes things that the public doesn't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis, but are crucial for the ongoing
Most people have never heard of the Division of Library Development.
That's right.
Just like they've never heard of IMLS. These are small organizations with really hardworking people who do so much. I think IMLS had only maybe 75 employees, and I think there's only a handful left down
there. I think there's 12 left or something like that, trying to, you know, wrap things up.
It's frightening, and I was just at the Connecticut Library Association conference this week on Tuesday, and it's the only time of the year, you know, where everybody can gather or, you know, go from all kinds of libraries in Connecticut. And I heard somebody say that the pandemic was easy. They would rather have the pandemic back again in terms of work and the impact it had on their work than deal with this kind of uncertainty. But that's how challenging it was. And that's the unease that people are feeling at this point. So it's frightening. And Connecticut, it's hard because I think I've mentioned before in our conversations that we're so decentralized as a town government thing. Our counties are just judicial. And so our state library really is the thing that unites us. We have, for such a small state, we have five different library consortia, and they're not affected by this funding. It's really the state that holds us all together, and they provide the statewide catalog that enables the interlibrary loan system to function, and the delivery people and the vans that do it. So it really does literally hold us all together.
Well, I think from our perspective, the silver lining is I think this whole issue has raised awareness of libraries and their importance and of how they are funding and how precarious that funding can be. And, you know, I think, and we have seen here sort of a groundswell of support for libraries. All of our towns that we serve have passed, and the county that we're in, have passed resolutions in support of the library and continued federal and state funding, which has been sent to our representatives at all levels of government.
That's great.
And there's been a lot of support, you know, by patrons, we had a National Library Week funding appeal, which we do every year, but this year was our most successful ever. So I think it has raised awareness, which is not a bad thing.
Right. Yeah, they didn't plan those cuts to the grants very well because the announcement on April 1st was National Library Week was kicking off. So
that's right.
We had lots of communications planned anyway. So it was actually, it had to happen, you know. We were able to get the word out, certainly.
So on a more cheerful note, so what kinds of things are people reading in your library these days?
Oh, all kinds of things. You know, the same titles are popular, I think, and there's a lot of new books coming out, so people are excited about those. A lot of big books coming out, so that'll be good. What about over in...
It's right now, I guess, Emily Henry's Great Big Beautiful Life.
That's right. That just came out this week.
Popular book, I think I said last time. But as you said, there's a lot coming out in the next month or so. So there's a lot of interest in that. What are you reading yourself?
Yeah, I'll just say I had a really hard time. I just placed my May book order last week, and it was very hard to whittle down my list to fit my budget. There were so many things. I don't remember May being this big in the past. I remember June being really popular month for big new books. So there was a lot to look forward to. I'm just about finishing up a novel that came out about a year ago called Clear by Karen Davies, a Scottish writer. And did you read that?
Yes.
Yeah, beautiful book. Small sort of gem of a book, a historical novel about the 19th century in Scotland during a time when the rural poor were evicted from various areas and schism within the Church of Scotland, and a minister is sent to a very remote island north of Scotland to evict the last resident on the island and becomes, through various things, as you'll recall, becomes dependent on this person who right. still lives on the island and the impact and their relationship. It's such beautiful writing. Really enjoying it. And I had the great pleasure of getting an advanced copy of James Rebank's next book that's coming out, I think, in June or July. I can't remember the date, called The Place of Tides. You'll remember he was the author of A Shepherd's Life, which was very popular. He's a British sheep and cattle farmer, and he writes beautifully. And this new book, he spent, it's a memoir of his time one summer that he spent on a remote island in Norway. Talking about islands a lot today, aren't I? And it's a place where they still collect the down by hand from the eider ducks for down garments and quilts and duvets. And it's a centuries-old tradition, and very few people are still doing it this way. And he spent time with this woman who was quite advanced in age, and it was her last summer going out to this island to do this. And it was just so eye-opening to me because I never thought about, where does that come from? How do they do it? You know, where do the feathers come from, the down? And it's just a beautiful, beautiful story about this woman. It's called The Place of Tides, and it's coming out this summer, so I recommend it. How about you? What are you reading?
So I just finished a much lighter book in many ways, which was probably needed.
Yes.
I just finished Matt Haig's The Life Impossible. It's a speculative fiction piece, like much like his other work. He's the author of The Midnight Library.
Yes, that was such a popular book.
Yeah. So The Life Impossible is also about an island. It's about a retired math teacher who is left a rundown house on a Mediterranean island by a childhood friend. And she goes there with no real plan, but to try to find some answers about her friend's life and death. And she ends up as part of this effort to save an ecosystem, get some psychic powers in the process. Some of the magical realism that is a little abstract and not quite convincing to me, but I still enjoyed it. It was a fun read and a hopeful story, something a bit lighter than most of my reading. So it was fun.
Yeah, we've been joking here that we should just, for the summer, stock comedies on the shelves, right?
Fun, there you go.
Fun, relaxing books. Good summer reads. Yep. Maybe we should plan a trip to an island, it sounds like.
Yeah. So what do you have coming up for events in the next few weeks?
We have our big annual fundraising gala on May 17th on Saturday from 5 to 7:30 at the Sharon Country Club. We have it's called the Spring Soiree this year, and tickets are for sale on our website. We'll have food and drink and wonderful things to bid on, lots of experiences. And some amazing artwork. We have a etching by our local resident artist, Jasper Johns, and some other local artists as well, and fun experiences, gardening things, and jewelry. So it's a big, big supporter for us. So we encourage our local residents to come out and support us. And we have our regular weekly events going on. Our senior lunch and learn will feature a Qigong lesson outside, weather permitting, a week from Friday on May 9th. So we invite people to have lunch with us and then enjoy some movement outside. And we're also conducting a community service survey right now that we're collecting. And there's a link to that on our website. And we'll be having a community input meeting, a focus group about the library and the future of the library on Wednesday, May 21st at 2 p.m. And we invite people to register for that on our website. How about over in your neck of the woods?
So we are continuing our countywide community read. So we've got some programs related to that. This Saturday, May 3rd, we are having a volunteer fair with organizations from the region who are looking for volunteers. So if you're interested in volunteering, come look at what some of the opportunities are, and hopefully you can get matched up with an organization who could use your help. On Sunday, we have a program on reducing our consumption. So we talk a lot about reduce, recycle, reuse, often focusing on the recycling, but this program will focus on reducing, which is probably the most important of the three. To reduce our carbon footprint, we need to first reduce what we consume. Then on Monday, we have the last of our history webinars with the FDR Museum and Library. And this one is on FDR as a hobbyist. We have, let's see, next week, we also have, next week on the 8th, a week from today, we have the first of three art workshops that we will be having with local artists, taught by local artist Tia Maggio. This three-session series will be looking at three images or themes in American history, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Great Migration, and quilts. And in each session, participants will learn about the subject and its place in our history and about the artists who have portrayed these topics, and then we'll get the opportunity to do their own interpretations. So those are always popular. If you're interested, it is limited, so you can email to register. There is still some space left.
Oh, sounds great. I always get great programming ideas when I hear what you have coming up. This sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and then on the 18th, we have yet another community read program. This one is an understory walk. It's a little hike at Taconic State Park with a Taconic State Park ranger to look at the plants and their relationships with one another, which is one of the themes of Braiding Sweetgrass, the book of our community read. And then the following week on the 24th, we have the last of our community read programs, which is Planting a Three Sisters Garden, the children's program. And we have some raised beds in our backyard, and we will be planting our gardens, and one of them will be a Three Sisters Garden of corn, squash, and beans.
Well, that's excellent.
So lots going on. So I hope people get out to their libraries and take advantage of the many offerings, and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks, Tammy.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.